There are more and more brightly colored bikes parked on valley sidewalks just waiting for someone to rent them out. Bike sharing programs are expanding, and recently a new model has emerged, dockless bike sharing. That means there isn't a specific place where riders pick up and drop off their bikes. They just leave the bikes where they're going. Valley cities have both dockless and more traditional station-based systems. And joining me to talk about how they work together is Casey Wichman, a fellow at Resources for the Future, which is an environmental economics think tank. And Casey, first off, how long has bike sharing really itself been a thing?
Well, in the U.S., bike sharing probably really took off around 2010, and it's been growing ever since. But really, in the last even 6 months, there's been a huge explosion of bike sharing in urban areas as well.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think people enjoy riding bikes. It's a convenient way to get around town. It's relatively cheap, and it's nice to be outside. There are health benefits. It's a little bit more enjoyable than riding around in a car. And I think it reflects the growing trend of people moving to urban areas and kind of living downtown.
Now, it seems as though the earlier, and by earlier, you know, maybe even just within the last 6 or 8 months or so, you know, sort of the first models were there's a place where you go and you pick up a bike, you ride it where you need to go, and then you bring it back to that place. Now there's this, what they're calling a dockless model, where you don't have a set place that you have to pick it up and bring it back. It seems like that's a pretty significant evolution in the industry that isn't that old to begin with.
That's right. And I think these new dockless bike share programs really fill in a gap that the traditional transit mode, the traditional bike share mode was not filling. And that's that there wasn't always a bike where you needed it at the time you needed it with the old traditional model. With the new bikes, you can hop on a bike anywhere and ride it around and then leave it on the sidewalk just outside your home or just outside your workplace, which makes it a little bit more flexible. It expands the range of the traditional bike sharing models. So it's a rather exciting experiment that we're seeing in a lot of U.S. cities, Washington, D.C., Dallas, Seattle. Each of these cities are experimenting with these new dockless bike share programs.
Now, in the Phoenix metro area, there are both the docked and dockless models in different cities. Do you think that there is room for both in a particular market?
I think so. I think both the traditional mode and the dockless bike shares are complementary to some degree. And really, I think this is an area where a little competition is good to encourage innovation and novel pricing structures that might help manage the bikes a little bit better and help move people around in ways that they weren't really commuting before.
You referenced the dockless system as sort of filling in the gaps of where the traditional system had been. Is it fair to call that a market disruptor, do you think? I mean, is that a serious sort of change in how the industry works?
I don't know if I would call it a market disruptor. I would say with the traditional mode of bike sharing, one of the biggest concerns was this idea of rebalancing. You would have at the top of a hill in the morning rush hour of a residential neighborhood, you would have very few bikes available to ride because everyone rides them downhill to work and there's no room for anyone else to grab a bike. So I think these new dockless bike share does expand the range. And I think, if anything, it forces the traditional bike sharing model to rethink what service it's providing and what aspect of the bike share people really value.
How do the economics of a dockless system work? I mean, it seems to me that you would end up pretty quickly with bikes scattered all over town without necessarily one being close to where you want to be or where you need to get to.
That's correct, and I think that's one of the reasons why I don't necessarily see dockless bike sharing programs taking over from traditional station-based programs, and that's because they're a little less predictable. You can look through your smartphone to see where the nearest bike is, but it's difficult to really plan a trip if you don't know where the next bicycle is going to be. And in terms of the economics of it, I think this provides a really novel way to start moving people around the city. But I think that there's a lot of ways where the pricing structures of these bike shares could actually be leveraged to make sure there are bikes where you need them at the time that you need them. So you can incentivize people to ride bikes into high demand areas and maybe charge them a little more if they take a bike from a high demand area as well.
Almost like, I mean, to an extent, it's kind of like what Uber does with like surge pricing.
Right. And this is something that economists love, because it really, you know, it's kind of a fundamental economic concept, this dynamic pricing structure, where you can use prices, you can use price incentives to help solve some of the problems that are introduced when you have a finite number of bikes around town, but excess demand for those bikes.
Is this industry one that is a good moneymaker for the companies that are involved in it? I mean, could it be, you know, on maybe a slightly smaller scale, but something like Uber and Lyft?
So that's an interesting question. And I think there's a lot we can learn from China's recent experience with these dockless bike sharing programs. The programs in China have garnered a lot of private interest, private money to initiate their programs. But I think they also tried to grow a little too fast than the public was ready for them. And really, I think a successful bike share program needs to have public buy-in. In the U.S., there are kind of two models. One is the dockless privately owned bike share program that does simply respond to these profit incentives. But the traditional modes typically require public funding to start up, and then they operate under a system where their day-to-day financing is covered by advertising or user fees and revenues. So I think there are two kind of competing models, and it's not clear that either of them is quite sustainable in the long run. So I do think that there will be some innovation that will be required to think about how we can make sure these cycling programs are viable in the long run.
All right. Casey Wichman is a fellow with Resources for the Future in D.C. Casey, thanks a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate it.